Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we continue our conversation with Zitherin from Adelaide about puzzle caching. We look at some of the events occurring around the country during April and May, and we unveil a new GeoCoin that you can get your hands on. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to GeoTalk episode number 27. Here we are in mid-April. Gee, it's getting cold at the moment in Sydney. I don't know what it's like around the rest of the country, but rain and cold, that seems to be the feature of the last week or two. And it's not too good for geocaching because I went out about a week ago looking for some caches around Bicentennial Park and I got about three of them. And just as I was finishing up the third, a huge thunderstorm broke and I recorded a little bit of lightning and thunder and so forth. Maybe we've got some of that now. There it is in the background, and had to delay the fourth one until a few days later, but I got that in the end. Anyway, the weather, very interesting, so interested to hear what it's like around the rest of the country, what the weather is like in your part of Australia, and whether it's playing havoc with your geocaching adventures. The good thing is I'm back geocaching. It was 47 days, I think I counted, that I went without a geocache. And thank you very much for the email that I got from someone. I'll read that out towards the end in the mailbag. I should make a correction. When I talked about routine, babies have no routine. The only routine is they have no routine. And I think anyone who's got kids or had kids will know about that. But the great thing is we're all teed up. Hopefully, little Zach is going to be coming with us to the geocaching event up in the Blue Mountains on the 3rd of May. And anyone in the Sydney area or the outer Sydney area, hopefully will see you up there. That's being hosted by Team WebGuy, the Autumn in the Blueies event. Talking about geocaching around the country, I switched onto YouTube the other day and I noticed Thomas Tank Engine, one of the geocaches I used to go caching with down in Canberra, and he's on a YouTube video, which is actually a news story from Win TV down there in Canberra, along with a couple of other geocaches. And it's great to see geocaches getting out there in the community and showing people on the media, through the media, that it is a fairly benign sport and a fun one at that as well. And they did a really good job on that piece, and I did not recognize where that cache was, so I have no idea what it was that I was looking for. But who knows, might be bump into it when I'm down there sometime in May. A bit of an update, as promised, on geocaching in parks in New South Wales. Now, of course, nothing has really changed at this point in time, although there was a little bit of discussion about caching in state forest, which is slightly different from national parks. I got in touch with someone from State Forest recently, and I know a number of people did. And the good news is that there are no changes to geocaching in State Forests in New South Wales at this stage, but they are looking at developing a policy more centered around the sort of safety aspect of it. They're not looking to limit geocaching or ban it at any stage. They're just looking at putting a few words to paper, and they'll let us know a little bit more down the track when that process is going to take place. But I also noticed on the Geocaching Australia forums that there's been a bit of discussion about geocaching in national parks in the states of Victoria and Queensland. Now, I know that at the moment they're allowed, and there is a Queensland geocacher up, I think, in the sort of Rockhampton region. Dugan might be able to fill us in on that. He's been in touch, or he works for national parks, I should say, and he's been in touch with a couple of fellow national parks people there and discussing geocaching. And obviously, Victoria are aware of it too, but the main message to come out of it is that geocachers need to be aware of the environmental impact that they're having when they go geocaching, both placing geocaches and looking for geocaches. And I'll give you some links to some of the discussions that are in the Geocaching Australia forums, and you can read a little bit about that and get a bit of an understanding on the background of what's going there. But hopefully people who go geocaching in those two states in particular will stay sensible and remember that they shouldn't cause any damage. And we don't want to end up in the situation in those two states we have here in New South Wales where they're actually officially banned. On the subject of being environmentally aware when geocaching, the Caches of the Round Table recently released episode number 9, which looked at green geocaching, and I was able to be part of that that forum. Time zones worked in my favour in this particular case. In that particular episode, I think it was Ice and Rise, Baz Chaz, Daryl W4 and Firefly O3, and we discuss some of the aspects of geocaching and being environmentally aware, so using rechargeable batteries, making sure we stick to paths, using public transport and our own transport a little bit less, and also making sure that we don't leave any rubbish around. So it's an interesting podcast, goes for about an hour, and I'll give you the links to that in the show notes. And finally, a bit of an announcement. I know that I haven't always been a big fan of the GeoCoin, but I'm slowly coming around, and as such, we're going to be releasing a GeoCoin, the GeoTalk GeoCoin. It's being minted at the moment, and it should be arriving in Australia in mid-May. Now, to start off with, we're going to make this only available to Australian geocaches, and depending on what we've got left, we'll then offer it outside, or if the demand is big enough, we might do a second run. So I'll have a link in the show notes with a bit of information and some pictures about what that coin will look like, and the proceeds of the sale from that GeoTalk GeoCoin will go towards keeping this podcast running. Well, that's enough of me talking. Let's get on to the GeoTalk Trivia Challenge. The question for this one, this is a bit of a sad one. I think I might bring the violins in for this one. There they are, the violins. What are the most unloved caches in Australia for each state? So that is the caches that have had the most number of days since their last find. The answer to that at the end of the podcast. You might recall in our last episode, we were chatting with Zitheran from South Australia about puzzle caching, and we continue the conversation. And the first question I ask is about adjusting the difficulty of caches when you think you might have got it a little bit wrong. Along those lines then, I mean, if you find that you have set, say, a difficulty 5 cache or 4, something that you consider quite difficult and people are getting stumped, I mean, do you draw a line where you say, well, maybe I need to adjust the puzzle or simplify it or add in a clue?
Yes. Yeah, what I'll do is I think that the good caches have graded hints. Some of my caches won't have hints in where I want it to be a particular style of find. Like some of them, as soon as you put in one hint, its difficulty really plummets down quite a way. Other caches, if you can manage to do it, and it is very difficult to do, if you can have graded sort of hints or hints that aren't really obvious, like, you know, yes, you're stuck, here's how to do it sort of hints, but a hint that is in some way related to it or gets people thinking along the line of how to do it. And that can be done in a few ways, like the title of the cache is important in many caches, that it'll give a hint to the cache, either the final location or some aspect of it that might be involved. One of my puzzles is, you know, Roast Kakura with Dice. Now, it's a crazy sort of name, but the puzzle is a clearly Kakura puzzle, but the roast means something, and the dice part of it is part of the puzzle as well. And understanding that there's hints buried in the name of the puzzle as well can help people when they think they're stumped or they're thinking they're getting a cache with too many solutions, then the name can be used as a hint. And then there's the straightforward hints themselves can be used. One of the more successful series that people seem to have liked was is called the Cypher series I've got over here. And they came out around the end of 2005, where I wanted a series of caches that use ciphers. Standard substitution ciphers was what the theme of this series of puzzles was going to be. And what I've noticed is a lot of people were having trouble with trying to solve some of these things, even though they're sort of reasonably straightforward sort of substitution ciphers. Not many people sort of read books on code cracking and things like that. So I decided to put out a series of caches, starting off with cipher tin. And there was a tin, bronze, silver and gold initially. And they were in increasing difficulty. And part of this series was a couple of pages, actually, the explanation of, you know, what a substitution cipher is, how they work, There's then sections on how to crack them, going through sort of best information on how to crack these sorts of things with hints and ideas and some other information collected from other people who publish this sort of information on the web. And also the URL of the US military's book on how to crack ciphers, which is publicly available these days and is basically targeted at anyone who can at least read. And that has a whole pile of information on basically step-by-step how to do it. So some information came out of there. And then from that, they got more difficult. And we started off with a substitution and multiliteral substitution. And there was examples given in the case page. So when you printed out the page, it actually showed you an example of what sort of case, what sort of puzzle this was going to be and how you'd potentially go about solving it and hints as to how you'd solve it. And that progressed nicely up through the silver and the gold. And these cases, the series also involved terrain being quite high as they were all mounted on sort of man-made structures that needed climbing of some degree and varying difficulties. And that series, a lot of people, I think, have had a lot of joy out of that because the benefits they got from all the clues and hints in that particular series has actually enabled them to solve quite a lot of other cases. You see hints, messages come through on other when other people do similar substitution ciphers. You know, this would have been hard a while ago, but now I know how to do these cases sort of things. So from that point of view, if you have a bit of a plan as to how you'd like people to go about solving the puzzle, then you can sort of half walk them into the puzzle at least and to sort of get them set up on the right track.
So you've given us a bit of an insight into how you go about setting the caches. Just out of interest, do you have Simon Singh's book, the Code Book?
Yes,
yeah.
many years ago.
Not surprising. And, probably something for those who want to crack or create puzzle caches, probably worth getting, isn't it?
Yes. He has an online website with a whole pile of tools as well. The easiest way to get to it, you can search on Simon Singh, and it's called The Black Chamber, if I remember off the top of my head. If you search on Google, that'll take you to Simon Singh, who's a quite prolific author in the UK.
And from memory, he's done a couple of tours to Australia as well during Science Week, I think.
Yes, he's heavily involved in promoting science and all sorts of aspects, physics and things like that as well. Yeah, great person. And his website's good. It gives you nice, simple explanations on what it means and why you do it. And he has some little online cracking tools as well that help do things like frequency counts, which is good for cracking some of your substitution style ciphers and things.
Yeah. So what other tips would you give to people who are looking to solve some of the puzzle caches? I mean, you mentioned earlier looking at the title, for example, and looking for ciphers or patterns. What other ideas would you give to people?
The first thing people need to really remember is at the end of the day, you're looking most likely for a set of coordinates. It'll either be in the form of sort of minutes, minutes, dot, minutes, 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 which is traditionally how you see it, or occasionally you'll get sort of the degrees, degrees, and then five digits after it. So knowing that it's sooner or later you're going to either find out there's numeric form or words that say, you know, one as in zero, one, one, zero, N-E, and three is T-H-R-E-E. You can get an idea of probably what you're going to be looking for in all of these sorts of caches. So when it comes to digits, you're going to be looking for probably either 6, 10, or 15 digits. Now, if the cache is really close to where the initial coordinates are, within, say, 600 metres or so, you'll probably be able to get away with designing a puzzle cache where you've only got to really encode the last three digits of each location. So in that case, if there's a mention that the cache is within 400 metres of the initial locations, then you're probably looking for maybe only six digits, which is the variations of the minutes. If it's not mentioned or it's maybe a little bit further away, potentially you're looking for 10 or 15 digits. Now, where this raises its head is if you, say, have a poem and as you read the poem, it doesn't seem to make much sense, but then if you count up the number of lines and it has, say, 15 lines of poetry, this is potentially a hint that each of those lines is going to correspond to a number. So a lot of the puzzles, the traditional style puzzles, are really sort of codes where you're ending up for, you want a digit between 0 and 9, and you have some information which is a word or an image or something or another group of numbers or something, and you're really trying to transform them from one set of numbers into another set of numbers. So lines of poetry. It might be the number of words per line or a certain letter in the line. If you're down to only, say, 10 digits, which is where you can assume that the degrees is going to be the same as the initial location, which in most cases it generally will be, then you'll be looking for 10 of something. So it might be 10 parts to an image or 10 parts to a grid or 10 words. There might be just one. The puzzle might just be 10 words, and the length of the word might indicate the actual number. So, the first word of the sentence starts off as... the word the. So, okay, three letters, so the first digit is three, et cetera. So a lot of it is trying to work out how you think the person who has designed the puzzle might have encoded it to try and eventually lead you to the 6, 10 or 15.
I think fortunately for a lot of people, this is a podcast because they're going to want to rewind and take notes on everything you've just said because there's a lot of information. But I think you're quite right. I mean, I've found that Canberra, I should point out, and Brisbane also are certainly growing in the number of puzzle cases they've had. And I've done quite a few in Canberra. And I find the key is looking for those patterns of numbers. Now, sometimes they're hidden in diagrams and sometimes they're hidden in the number of words or the number of letters that appear and so forth. And I think that's a really useful tool to look out for knowing, for example, in Australia that we have 15 digits if we're looking at the full south and east coordinates.
Yes. Of course, if you're caching in Europe or other places that are along sort of Greenwich Mean, then of course you might be down to a different number of digits. But in Australia, those particular numbers are generally going to cover anything going to be finding in Australia. The other tool, the other important tool to use is Google. If you find a case and there's words in it or there's phrases that just look strange, you'd be absolutely amazed by you can get away with four words that seem normal sort of words. You do a search on Google, and sure enough, you find out it's the lyrics of a song, or it's a little bit out of a play, or it's the name of a type of music, or something like this. And basically, the longer sort of bit you can type into those, the better you'll get. And that might be the difference between solving a puzzle and not, is realizing that something that you thought was to do with chemistry or something like that, that chemicals have numbers associated with them, or drugs have numbers associated with them. Many, many things in our society are sort of coded with a sort of numeric equivalent. So when they're in databases and things, it's easy to find. And you might find that someone who works in the medical industry or something puts out a puzzle cache and with words of illnesses or drugs or sort of information that they deal with in their day-to-day life. If you know that they work in the medical area and you see these words, then a few minutes with Google and you'll soon discover something about how that particular industry might encode information. And many times you'll find that people have used their sort of local knowledge for putting together a cache that has these numbers buried in what appear to be sort of words that you wouldn't normally associate a number with.
One final question. We noticed that Team Web Guy went over to Adelaide a few months back and did your ultraviolet cache. Now, did he actually solve the puzzle?
Yes, he actually did solve the puzzle. And one of the few teams who has solved the puzzle, actually, the first few finders of that, as far as I can tell, actually did a what you'd call a brute force search of the area. For those who don't know this cache, it's a 5-5 cache. It's set underground in, it's about 4.5 kilometres of tunnel work to do it. And that's taking the optimal route. The first few teams, I think, actually did a brute force search of the drain system to actually find the final cache as they didn't solve the puzzle. Some of the way that some of these puzzles get solved, you get an indication about if someone finds it, how they've actually managed to come to the final location. And so in that case, no, I was impressed. I remember the night he sat down and worked out the puzzle, and that was really good.
Well, he's more than just a pretty face. That's good to know. Well, look, it's been great talking to you, Nigel. I hope that people who have been listening have gotten an insight into not only how you put caches together, but how to put their own and solve puzzle caches around the world. On behalf of everyone listening to GeoTalk, thanks very much for chatting with us.
Yeah, thank you for the chat.
Once again, a big thank you to Zetherin for taking part in that interview. You can probably tell we chatted for over an hour and a half, so you've got a bit of a condensed version there. The cache that he talked about, the Team Web Guy went into, you can see that in GeoTalk Video Edition. I'll give you a link to that, to the YouTube version, or you can go back through the archive and download that video and see a little bit of his adventures underneath Adelaide, and also give you a link to that page. You can have a look at the puzzle, and maybe when you're in Adelaide, give it a go. Now, if you're wishing GeoTalk came out more often, and you can't wait every 2 to 3 weeks when I get my act together and get it out, there are a number of other geocaching podcasts out there. Of course, you've heard me mention Podcacher, and you should check that out if you haven't already at podcacher.com. There's also Eyes and Rise Geocaching Video Zine. Now, that's been around for, I think, 3 years. It's into its fourth year. Check that out at Eisenrye, Eisenrye.com, and I'll give you a link for that in the show notes. Another podcast that you should listen out for is the Geocaching Podcast. Now, it's a live podcast, so it's got all the bloopers, it's got all the errors, it's got all the ums and ahs that I cut out of this one, that I can be bothered to cut out of this one. So check that out. That's it, the Geocaching Podcast. I think it's, I'll give you a link in the show notes, but from memory, it's geocachepodcast.blogspot.com. And the last one that I'll give a mention for this one, because the list is continually growing, is the Granite State Geocaching Podcast with Bass Chaz. And here's a promo for that one.
The ice has melted. The snow's all gone. The plows and the snowblowers are all put away. It's springtime. And it's time to break out the GPS, put on your hiking shoes, and go caching. But when you can't go geocaching, be sure to check us out. We are the Granite State Geocachers Community Podcast, www.gsgcradio.com.
Well, it's time to have a look at some of the events that will be occurring around the country in the not-too-distant future. And actually, on this coming Thursday, the 24th of April, is the ACT and Brindabella Gone Bush Weekend. Now, that's being hosted by Big Matt and Shell, who are fans of GeoTalk, and they're organising a four-wheel adventure into some of the more remote caches up in the Brindabella regions, and that should be a bit of fun. I'm obviously getting a bit of a head start on the long weekend too, being a Thursday. On the long weekend, on the Anzac Day holiday, in central Victoria in Shepparton, is the Central Victoria Get-Together Version 2. Now, that's being held by CD Mark, Team Rubik, and Team Grahman. And later that evening, they're also hosting the TNT Oi at the GV. So you can check out the details for those two events that are being hosted on Anzac Day over in Shepparton. On the 3rd of May, you might have heard me mention at the start of the podcast, is the Autumn in the Blueies event being hosted by Team Web Guy up at Wentworth Falls in the Blue Mountains. This is the third time that he's hosted this event. And last year, the weather was beautiful. It was really a perfect day. Now, so far, the weather's been a bit wet, but fingers crossed, it'll all clear up. And I'm sure it's going to be another great afternoon up in the Blue Mountains. And on the 10th of May, listeners of Podcacher podcast will know all about this. These two events. It's the WWFM3, the Worldwide Flash Mob Version 3. Now, there are two of them being hosted in Australia. There's about 90, almost 100 worldwide. The two in Australia, there's one being hosted by Tilby down in Canberra called The Last Post. And in Victoria, Rhino Geo and Facet Man are hosting Make a Federal Case of It down at Federal Square. Now, those two events start at 10 a.m. They finish at 10:15, and that'll be on the 10th of May. So that'll be in about 2 weeks' time from now. Check those out. Links to all those events in the show notes. And don't forget, if you're hosting an event, why not you promote it yourself? Don't let me do all the work for you. Call in on the GeoTalk hotline or send us an email at geotalk@mac.com. it's time now to go to the GeoTalk mailbag. And I actually got two emails this time. That was nice. The first one is from New Zealand, from the organist, who first of all says congratulations on the arrival of your son. Thanks very much for that, Martin. And he also talks a little bit to me about his early geocaching days. He is geocaching with his daughter, who's only at the age of 19 months, so just shy of 2 years, and says that the first time he went geocaching after a birth was 7 weeks later. And I've calculated that's pretty much how long the gap was for me. And he said the first time that he took his daughter geocaching was at age 11 months. So there you go. So, well, Zach's going out next month, so that makes him 3 months, but I'm not sure how long it'll be before we get him to chase around Tupperware in the woods. Our next email comes from Peter, who's one of the developers behind the Geocaching Australia website, but also involved with cachinggames.com. Now, you might recall cachinggames.com put together the River Deep Mountain High competition, which was a lot of fun. A lot of people got involved in that. Now, he talks about a possible new competition later this year. Now, I can't reveal too much, but if you go back to episode 25, I think it was, talked about the well-rounded cacher. That's all I'm going to give away, but there might be something along those lines later on in the year. Now, if you've got something that you want announced on GeoTalk, or you've got some feedback, or you want to send a cheerio or a shout-out, as they say up north, then send an email to geotalk@mac.com, or you can phone it in on 02-800-50-GEO, so that's 800-50-436, or you can just record it on your mobile phone or on your iPod or any other MP3 device and email it in. And don't forget, check out the website at www.geotalkpodcast.com, where you can find links to everything that we talk about on the show. It's time now to look at the answers for the GeoTalk trivia question. Cue the violins. The question was, what are the most unloved geocaches in Australia? Now, in no particular order. Actually, now let's go in order. We'll go from the least unloved. That's in the state of Tasmania. There's a cache called Yorkie, which hasn't been found for 632 days. The next most unloved one is in Queensland. It's the Great Aussie Icon Hunt number 2 from Mountain Biker Oz, I think, because he's got a series of those around the country. 757 days since that one's been found. We then move across to the state of South Australia. Bluffed again, hasn't been found for 929 days. In Victoria, Murder Most Foul clocks up 1,161. That's just ahead of the Northern Territory's Crossing Paths with 1,102. Then we move to the ACT. Now, this is actually my cache. This is how unloved is my cache. I feel so ashamed. Canberra's Horizon, 1,206. And I think from memory that's December 2004. We then move across to the west, to Western Australia, to Pilbara Landscapes, and it hasn't been found for 1,233, which leaves the state of New South Wales with the most unloved cache. Now, this one's an interesting one because it's actually a Geocaching Australia cache. It's a GA prefix. It's I6 Key by Ideology, 1,917 days since it's been found. That's a group of very unloved caches, and I think it's our duty as geocaches to go out and give some love back to them and get them off that list. So see how you go over the next couple of weeks. I'll be interested to hear how people go. Okay, one final thing before we absolutely finish the show. You heard me talk about the GeoTalk GeoCoin, which will be released next month. I'll put some details up on the website at www.geotalkpodcast.com. You'll find a little bit of information, but I'm not taking orders until the coins arrive here in mid-May here in Australia. So don't get too excited. Save your pennies up for those. The sales will be to Australians first for the first few weeks, and then it'll be open to overseas orders. Now, there'll be two types, there'll be a silver geocoin which will be available for sale. The gold one, they're special ones. You have to be very special to get one. Now, those people who have contributed to the show in the geocacher profiles, you'll be receiving one in the mail over the next coming weeks. Thank you very much for everything you've done in contributing. And any future contributors, anyone else who volunteers to be part of the geocacher profile segment, we haven't had one for a couple of episodes, give me an email and you never know, you might find that you'll receive one in the mail too. Now, if you're too shy to go on GeoTalk, but you still want to get your hands on a gold GeoTalk GeoCoin, all you need to do is go to iTunes. Now, this competition for the month, the remainder of April and the month of May, up to May 31, is only open to Australian and New Zealand listeners. All you have to do is go to the iTunes store, find GeoTalk in the directory and leave a comment, either in the New Zealand or the Australian store. And for everyone who leaves a comment up until May 31, you'll go into the draw to win a gold GeoTalk GeoCoin. So all the best to everyone and hopefully you get your hands on one very soon. Well, that's it for this episode of GeoTalk. Now, don't forget, visit the website at www.geotalkpodcast.com. I've got links to everything that's been discussed in the show, and if I've missed anything, then drop me an email and we'll add it up there. You'll also notice now that there are banner ads that have been included. Now, they've been put there to help support the cost of the podcast, because unfortunately it does cost a few dollars each month to host it. So if you'd like to contribute, just check out some of the links, and hopefully they'll, over the next few weeks, we'll refine those links so that they'll go direct to geocaching related stores, particularly for those of us here in Australia and down under in New Zealand. So check that out at geotalkpodcast.com. Well, on the next episode, hopefully we'll be heading to the state of Tasmania and we'll be talking to the Geocaching Tasmania Association and finding out a bit about what they have planned over the next 12 months. Until next time, safe geocaching.